Hot Rod.
Good morning, everybody. Good morning, all you magnificent melon heads of the world. Happy Wednesday, everybody. Today is December 3rd, 2025. And our top story this morning is the job market. And, well, the job market, it sucks, as anybody who's actually out there looking for a job could probably tell you. ADP, private payrolls, came out minus 32,000 jobs for the month of November. We all saw the headlines. We've had layoffs at Verizon, layoffs at big tech companies by the thousands, some cases tens of thousands. Now it's actually hitting the private payrolls. Now, look, ADP, the reason I'm making such a big deal out of this is because it's the best jobs data we have since the government shutdown. We haven't really gotten any data from the federal government. The data we did get for September was highly sus, in my opinion. We're not going to get it for October. I don't know when we're going to get November. Maybe we just don't get jobs data anymore because we've adopted the Chinese Communist Party method of just not reporting the data we know we're not going to like. So ADP is kind of the best that we have. Loss of 32,000 jobs for November. Silver lining here, October was revised higher by 5,000 to 47,000 gains. So we've got a net loss of 27,000. Some interesting industries in the mix. We'll talk about where the jobs are being lost and where they're being gained. Text in the report, things like cautious consumers are being mentioned. Uncertain macroeconomic environments. In other words, the economy's been in a recession since 2022, kind of like we've been saying on this channel for years, even as everybody screamed it was the best economy ever because number go up. You could see the real economy has been struggling the whole time. It's been papered over with an AI bubble, with government deficits running 6 to 7% of GDP. But meanwhile, the real economy has been getting worse. Case in point, you got trucking companies going out of business, porta potta companies going out of business, pallet companies going out of business. Things that actually move and get built aren't moving and aren't getting built. Meanwhile, we've got an article in CPA Practice. CPA Practice Advisor, this obscure website. They're talking about a survey that was done at resume.org. 3 in 10 companies surveyed are planning to lay people off before the end of this year. 3 in 10, 30% of companies are going to cut people right in the middle of the freaking holidays. And this survey mentions that most of these companies' survey respondents admitted they didn't actually have to. They just want to get it done before the end of the year, make the books look better at the end of the year, maybe make the quarter, fire people before they use their unused paid time off. For whatever reason, they're cutting people right in the middle of holidays. And honestly, my take on that is it's a shitty thing to do. And we have a choice whether or not to spend our money at companies that fire people at Christmas. That's my take on that one. Delayed tariff impacts also starting to hit the job market. We got an article in CNBC to that effect. We all knew the pain from tariffs was coming. We didn't know when. We didn't know how much. It's starting to show up. I think some of the tariffs were reflected in those Black Friday sales numbers, where we realized, you know, initially they're like, oh, spending was up so much year over year. And then we realized less stuff was actually bought, which means the prices rose. Adobe Analytics said about, or no, it was Salesforce said it was prices were up about 7%. That's your tariff starting to show in the CPI numbers. But we wouldn't know because we're not getting inflation data either. That's fun. Also going on, big one this morning, the SEC has halted the review of dozens of leveraged ETF products. And I do mean dozens. And guys, there is some seriously smelly financial excrement that had been proposed, like 3x levered Dogecoin ETFs. Letters have gone out to 9 different issuers of these ETFs. The SEC is warning them that basically their applications violate value at risk requirements, that they're fudging the numbers to make these products look less risky than they are, that they're marketing them to investors who have no idea what they're buying, and the losses are going to pile up. And we were just talking about levered ETF products yesterday when we were talking about strategy stock and how the losses in these levered MicroStrategy ETFs were just unbelievably huge in a short period of time. Guys, be careful with these levered ETF products. Know what you own and understand the basic principle of time decay and the fact that losses are more powerful than gains. And if you don't know what I'm talking about, stay the hell out of levered ETF products. Trust me, Pick any one of them that's been around for a couple of years, zoom way out on the chart, and you'll see what I'm talking about. CNBC also has an article out this morning warning about potential losses in levered ETF. It's like the financial system got together and realized, hey, guys, all these retail people that we suckered into buying these products over the last few years, they're all about to get wiped out. So let's quick write some letters and issue some articles so it looks like we've been out in front of this thing versus promoting these things. I mean, how many interviews have we seen on Bloomberg and CNBC and the CEO of Direction talking about this exciting new offering of a 2X levered CoreWeave ETF? What's the worst thing that could happen? Don't answer that. Meanwhile, we've got a code red at OpenAI. This was issued yesterday. Sam Altman is calling on OpenAI's employees to improve the quality of ChatGPT immediately, delay everything else. That is a stark contrast to what he says when he goes on TV and talks about the curing of cancer and helping all the children of the world with his product. Improve it or else. What's going on here? Gemini is eating their lunch. GPT-5 was an embarrassment to OpenAI. Gemini 3 surprised people with how good it was. And now OpenAI, remember, they're hopelessly dependent on raising more capital to survive. And when you've got the second best, third, maybe even fourth best product on the market, don't expect to raise the trillions of dollars you've promised to spend on your money-losing offering. Also, yesterday, there was widespread issues reported with ChatGPT that I don't know if this was after the memo was issued and everybody's like, okay, let's go ahead and experiment. And they made changes and the changes didn't work. But there's some pretty hilarious quotes in this article about people talking about how I have essays due tomorrow and ChatGPT isn't available. Maybe there's like a parable or a moral to the story in there somewhere. I don't know. But big problems over at OpenAI this morning. Marvell earnings came out last night. Now, this story with Marvell was interesting. Shout out to my buddy Greg over at the Coastal Journal. He did an excellent write-up on this yesterday. Marvell reported earnings yesterday, and they disappointed investors. Marvell stock sold off 5%, 6% after those earnings hit the tape. Then the conference call started, and a whole bunch of stuff that was not in the SEC filings got said on the conference call. And all of a sudden, the stock rallied like 15%. A whole bunch of stuff like hype, you know, future sales. Oh, we expect our orders to grow so much next year. And this next product is going to be so great. The next thing over the horizon. And Greg correctly draws parallels to the hypothetical future value that Enron was known for. Now, Enron took the hypothetical future value and actually included it in the SEC financials. That was fraud. Marvell didn't put it in the audited financials, but they did say it on the conference call to investors, causing the stock to rally. It's pretty much the same thing. We've seen this with Oracle. We've seen it with CoreWeave. We've seen it with NVIDIA. They take all these things that may happen in the future. They won't. See, also OpenAI won't be able to raise the capital to pay for all this crap. And then they report that as if it's already money in the bank, or they say it on the conference call as if it's already money in the bank, and idiots buy their stock. Again, if only there was a lesson in there. We got earnings from Dollar Tree this morning indicating that more consumers are being forced down the quality ladder to shop at Dollar Tree. Macy's earnings, the article says, oh, Macy's earnings is the best we've seen in years. They had a 0.5% same-store sales growth amid 3% plus inflation. That's not growth. That is a slow death. Macy's stock is selling off this morning. Italy wants their gold back. That's fun. And the housing market remains frozen. We got information from the Mortgage Bankers Association this morning on mortgage applications. Stick around to the end of the show for that one. Why don't we shrink my big melon of a head and let's see what's going on in the world of finance this morning. Don't forget that like button and that subscribe button for the YouTube algorithm. For you new guys, come on back tomorrow because we do this every day. And holy shnikes, what happened right as I hit the play button? Did all you guys decide to put your sell orders in right as I hit play? Somebody let me know in the chat what the heck happened at 9:00 that took the S&P down. Right now, the S&P is down 13 points ahead of the opening bell. It was up quite a few points. We've had about a 40-point drop in the last 10 minutes while I was talking. I don't know what it was, but down 15 points here. It was not the ADP private payrolls. That came out around 8:30, so maybe a delayed reaction to ADP. I don't know. Meanwhile, we've got the Dow is off by 60 points. Again, all of that coming since about 8:55, 9 a.m. Not sure what that was. Power outage, Copilot, Microsoft, people are talking about in the chat. Don't know. Oh, hold on. We got a text for Mish. Here we go. Mish is saying Microsoft curtailed a lot of AI products just announced. All right. So something's up with Copilot. We'll have to look for that article just as soon as we get through markets here. Okay, the Dow down 70 points, 0.15% lower, and the NASDAQ leading the way lower, off by 160 points or 0.62% lower. The DXY is a little bit weaker this morning as well, actually a lot of bit weaker, off by 36 basis points or 0.36%, 98.98 for the dollar. While we're talking about the dollar, guys, keep an eye once again on those Japanese borrowing costs. They are continuing to rise day in and day out. The yen carry trade remains one of those risks, along with the AI bubble and the government spending and liquidity and commercial real estate and crypto. Oh, yeah, there's a lot of black swans, all right? The white swans are the exceptions these days. Looking over at the bond market, we've got the 30-year yield, 4.728. That's off by 1 point and change. The 10-year, 4.058, off by 3 basis points. The 2-year yield is at 3.479, down almost 4 points. And the 1 month is at 3.797, off by 5 points, as they are pricing in the near certainty now of the Fed cutting at the December FOMC. Looking over at the commodities board, we've got gold is looking good this morning. Spot gold is at $4,228, higher by 22 bucks or about 0.5%. February COMEX futures for gold, 42.59. That's higher by 38 bucks or 0.9%. Spot silver was having a really good morning. It's off about a dime now, 9 cents lower, 0.15% in the red, but still 58.37 for spot silver. Check out those March COMEX silver futures, 58.97, higher by 27 cents or 0.5%. Overnight, we hit an intranight high of 59.65. We are flirting with 60 bucks for silver futures here. Yikes, I like the shiny. Copper's lower, or copper, I'm sorry, higher by 2.4%. Big move in copper today. We've got platinum is off by 1.9%, palladium down 1.15%, and crude oil is higher by 0.75%, $59.05 for January WTI futures. Before we get into some of these other stories here, let's just see what's going on here. We're going to go to CNBC. Microsoft declines. Here we go. Anything about Microsoft? Let's see what they're talking about. We're doing this live, by the way, guys, so there's going to be a lot of humming and hawing here. U.S. equity futures pulled back, bogged down by Microsoft as traders contemplate U.S. economic outlook. Okay, futures slid. Microsoft shares turned red after the information reported that it was cutting software sales quotas tied to artificial intelligence. The stock was last down 2% in pre-market trading. Other names linked to the AI trade fell in sympathy with Microsoft, with shares of chipmaker NVIDIA and Broadcom down 1%. Oh, my heart weeps for those NVIDIA bros. Full disclosure, I am personally short NVIDIA. All right, so the information, by the way, it's hilarious. I bet Jim Cramer is having a freaking meltdown on the air right now on CNBC, because Jim Cramer loves to talk smack about the information, even though the information has been freaking money in the bank for the last 2 years documenting this bubble. For whatever reason, Cramer hates it, probably because Jim Cramer does nothing but cheerlead for these companies. So they're reporting that software sales quotas tied to AI, that they were being cut. All right, they're cutting the quota for sales of AI. Does that mean AI sales are disappointing? Does that mean they expect them to decline? That's kind of implied here. I'm not saying that's what it is. That's the implication. Let's see what Bloomberg is saying about it. Anything here yet? Payrolls, trader bets, nothing about Microsoft yet on Bloomberg. Let's take a look at Microsoft stock. What is that one is doing here? Again, we're doing this in real time, guys. That's why I don't have this prepared for you guys. Okay, Microsoft down about 2%, off by 10 bucks, $480.30. Nothing in the news feed yet about Microsoft or this story here. So, all right, that for now is in the driver's seat. This story about Microsoft cutting their sales quotas tied to AI. That's the big one. Happened right as I went live, guys. That's why it's not in the title or anything. All right, back to your regularly scheduled program. Italy is urged by the European Central Bank to reconsider their gold reserves proposal. This is pretty interesting. Italy wants their gold back. They're kind of asserting their ownership over the gold, and the European Central Bank not liking that one. Italy was urged by the European Central Bank to rethink a push to declare its gold reserves the property of its people, a move critics say could open the door to the government selling off bullion. In a legal opinion dated Tuesday, the governing council asked Premier Giorgia Meloni's government to review the proposal following a request from Rome for officials in Frankfurt to study the matter. The Italian authorities are invited to reconsider the draft provision, also with a view to preserving the independent performance of the basic ESCB-related risks of the Banca Italia's under the treaty. This is kind of cute. I love the passive-aggressive here. The Italian authorities are like, we invite you to reconsider the draft. Why don't you just say no? Why don't you say we don't like it? Why don't you just complain? I don't know. All right. No, but we invite you to reconsider. So what's going on here? The issue seems to be that bullion is held by the central bank, which is a public institution independent of the government, as required by Italy's membership of the euro. Ministers, therefore, can't freely dispose of some reserves in the way that the UK sold off about half of its own stash under Tony Blair's government starting in 1999. The problem with this amendment is that it violates European treaties, former Bank of Italy Director General Salvatore Rossi said in an interview. Approving it as Italian law means opening up a huge battle between European institutions, and I wonder politically whether this is a good idea. So Italy is asserting ownership over its own gold reserves, basically saying the gold belongs to the people, not the central bank, which is a private institution or public institution independent of the government, whatever. Central banks always exist in this murky gray area. They're controlled by bankers. And the government is saying, nope, this is the people's gold. And the European Central Bank and the European Union is like, but that violates our treaty. Italy's saying, I guess we don't really care about that. I don't know. There's a lot going on here, a lot of intra-European politics. And to be honest with you, I don't spend a lot of time in this space. Keep an eye on this story. Bitcoin was ripping this morning. Currently dropping a little bit along with this Microsoft story over the last couple of minutes here, 92,276, higher than we were yesterday. Guys, it really looks like someone, some whale somewhere is yanking our chain. You see these ups and downs here all happening within a span of a few hours. This does not strike me as normal behavior. Some whale is out there moving huge blocks of Bitcoin, yanking the market one way or another. Not really sure what's going on here, but again, be careful on leverage. Crypto winter is here. Also, let's take a look at this interesting story. Eric Trump linked American Bitcoin stock crashes 40% as lockup ends. Oh, another rug pull? Really? Another crypto rug pull from the Trumps? Is that what this was? This is going to come back to haunt them in the midterms. I've been warning about this for months, guys. Eric Trump dismissed the sell-off as expected and said he plans not or has no plans to sell his personal stake. Shares of American Bitcoin, the mining and accumulation firm co-founded by Eric Trump and Donald Trump Jr., tumbled sharply on Tuesday after a portion of the company stock was released from its lockup period. American Bitcoin shares plunged nearly 50% after newly unlocked stock hit the market following the lockup expiry. Trump dismissed the sell-off as expected and said he has no plans to sell his personal stake. Investor nerves remain high as American Bitcoin is still down about 76%. From its September peak, despite strong earnings growth. So the stock sold off up to 50% yesterday. It did bounce into the close, still closing down 38.8% yesterday, up about 6% ahead of the opening here. Look at this one year to date, guys. It's kind of trading like a pump and dump, I'm just saying. And look, the lockup expires after the IPO. The executives dumped the stock. Eric Trump says it wasn't him. Okay, maybe it was some other guy. Whoever it was, they sold as soon as they were able to sell and they crashed the stock by half. That's not a good look. That's not a good look at all there. All right, let's talk about the big story this morning, though. United States ADP employment change, the private payrolls, which in my opinion, right now, because of the state of government data, this is the best look into the jobs market that we have. Private businesses in the U.S. cut 32,000 jobs in November, following an upwardly revised 47,000 gain in October. That October number was revised higher by 5,000. So we've got a net loss of 27,000 private sector jobs for the month of November. Hiring was particularly weak in manufacturing, lost 18,000. Professional and business services lost 26,000. Information down 20,000. Construction down 9,000. and financial activities down 9,000. On the other hand, job gains occurred in education, 33,000, leisure and hospitality, 13,000, natural resource and mining gained 8,000, with trade, transport, and utilities gaining 1,000. That natural resource and mining gain of 8,000 jobs is interesting because there's a lot of layoffs hitting the oil patch right now. A lot of the narratives in the articles I'm seeing says the oil companies are laying people off because of lower oil prices and expected lower oil prices. But at the same time, we've got this big surge of the government taking stake in mining companies and the rare earth drive for domestic production. So we've got a net gain of 8,000 in natural resource and mining. Whatever's going on with the rare earths is offsetting or more than offsetting the losses in oil. That's interesting. Hiring has been choppy of late as employers weather cautious consumers and an uncertain macroeconomic environment. And while November slowdown was broad-based, it was led by a pullback among small businesses, according to Dr. Nella Richardson, chief economist at ADP. Mom and pop are getting clobbered here. Small establishments lost 120,000 jobs, while medium companies added 51,000 and large companies created 39,000. Main Street is getting killed and Wall Street is gaining market share. Maybe that's why the government never seems to give a shit about how bad the economy gets, because the big corporations, the ones that actually donate to political campaigns, they always seem to get bigger during a recession. It's mom and pop who get clobbered, and mom and pop just don't fill campaign coffers. But they do expect mom and pop to turn out and vote, don't they? Meanwhile, annual pay for job stayers rose 4.4%, down from 4.5%. And for job changers, pay was up 6.3%, below 6.7% in October. So wage gains are still solid here for both job stayers and changers. But those losses, man, that hurts. And it looks like the losses are going to get worse here. 3 in 10 companies plan to conduct layoffs during the holidays. Yikes. Absolutely yikes from CPA Practice Advisor. A new survey from resume building platform resume.org found that 3 in 10 companies will lay off employees before year end, often during the weeks around major holidays, even though most say the timing was avoidable. You reckon that makes them complete a-holes if they're doing that when it's not necessary? The November 2025 survey, which polled 1,008 U.S. business leaders about how companies are approaching layoffs during the 2025 holiday season, revealed that 31% say their company will conduct layoffs before the end of the year. Most expect to carry out the cuts between Thanksgiving and Christmas at 57%, while 43% expect the week between Christmas and New Year's, and 32% say before Thanksgiving. 16% of respondents said the timing hasn't been finalized, but will occur before 2026. Many admit these layoffs could have been delayed, with 34% saying they definitely could have waited for four, and 40% saying they probably could have. Companies cite cost cutting before the first quarter of 2026 at 74% as the primary motivator, followed by avoiding bonus payouts at 42% and unused paid time off at 35%. And all I can say, guys, is when we start hearing about these layoffs right around Christmas time, which we will be reporting on this channel, you have a choice where you spend your money. And you have the option not to send your money to companies who fire people before Christmas so they don't have to pay out the unused vacation time or the annual bonus. All right. This kind of ruthless, heartless behavior. Look, if it's good for the stock and you want to invest it that way, that's fine. And if this pisses you off, don't spend your money there and make the shareholders pay. Then maybe it will change. We've also got a delayed tariff impact starting to hit and could cause companies to reduce headcount in 2026. We all knew the pain was coming. It's finally starting to show, and you can see it in some of these surveys here. President Trump's tariffs aimed at reshoring American job loss to overseas manufacturing could end up lowering domestic headcount instead, according to recent statements from corporate executives and economic forecasters. With the labor market already on the heels of a no-fire, no-hire climate, concerns are rising that duties on U.S. imports will raise operating costs and force companies to start paring their employment roles. For instance, respondents in the Institute for Supply Management's November survey of factory conditions expressed elevated levels of worries. We're starting to institute more permanent changes due to the tariff environment, one transport equipment executive wrote. That includes reduction of staff, new guidance to shareholders, and development of additional offshore manufacturing that would otherwise have been for U.S. exports. So we saw that in the ISM yesterday. The tariffs are starting to bite, but there's some more surveys here. The impact of higher tariff rates are yet to be fully felt in the U.S. economy, the report from the Paris-based OECD said. The report noted a sharp decrease in the value of U.S. imported goods subject to tariffs, which suggests that tariffs are affecting demand and will continue to weigh on trade volumes as announced tariffs come into full effect. Those kinds of risks set up challenges for the labor market in the year ahead. An economic report from the Federal Reserve last week also noted that employment declined slightly over the past 7 weeks or so, while manufacturers reported that tariff and tariff uncertainty remained a headwind. All right, so we've kind of dodged this bullet so far. A lot of companies front-loaded the tariffs. They bought all their inventory ahead of time. That delayed some of the pain. We knew the pain was coming. We don't know how much. We still don't know how much, but it is starting to show both in inflation and in the job markets. Meanwhile, SEC halts high-leveraged ETF plans in warning over risks. This is interesting. We got a lot of energy around these levered ETFs all of a sudden. It's coming out of nowhere. It's almost like somebody sees something coming. The U.S. SEC has issued a flurry of warning letters to some of the country's most prolific providers of high-octane exchange-traded funds, effectively blocking the introduction of products designed to deliver two or three times the daily returns of stocks, commodities, and cryptocurrencies. In a set of nine almost identical letters posted Tuesday, the SEC told firms, including Direction, ProShares, and Tidal, that it would not move forward with reviewing proposed launches until key issues are addressed. At the heart of the regulators' concerns is that the fund's risk exposures may exceed SEC limits on how much risk a fund can take relative to its assets. That's known as VAR, or value at risk. The SEC has a 200% limit on that, meaning if you're a levered ETF, you can't have more than 200% value at risk relative to, say, oil or CoreWeave shares or MicroStrategy, the underlying instrument that your ETF tracks. And a lot of these products are exceeding that limit. The letters direct the fund managers to either revise their investment strategies or formally withdraw their applications. In other words, the SEC saying, we're not approving this dog shit. Change it or get rid of it. And they sent this to nine different issuers, dozens of these products. And guys, these things, these are just awful, these levered ETFs, some of the things they're coming up with. Staff in the SEC's Division of Investment Management publicly posted the letters on the same day they were written, an unusually speedy move that suggests the regulator wants to get its concerns out fast. The agency typically posts correspondence with firms 20 business days after wrapping up reviews. All right, so this paragraph is important. The SEC is spooked here. They rushed this out. The same day the letter was written, they publish it to nine different companies, dozens of different products, when normally they wait 20 days to publish it. Why the sudden sense of urgency? And then we've also got this one in CNBC also talking about levered ETFs. Buyer beware, increasingly complex ETFs may burn investors due to market backdrop. On the same day as this SEC letter story, this is getting interesting now. From single stock to inverse exchange traded funds, firms have been marketing more complex strategies, offering potentially monster gains to individual investors. However, the recent market volatility may be intensifying the risk of losses. OpenInterest.pro co-founder and chief strategist Michael Cow, I apologize if I pronounced your name wrong, Michael, warned that markets turn lower or swing sharply, these leveraged products can underperform the assets they track and struggle. Leverage is a very appealing thing when the only things you've noticed over the course of the last couple of years is that prices are rising, the CNBC contributor told ETF Edge this week. But having leverage is a double-edged sword. Anybody who's read The Big Short, you notice here, right? Housing prices only ever go up. Stocks only ever go up. Sure, pile in the leverage ETF. What's the worst thing that could happen? The bad news is that sometimes the investor's education or understanding of both options and some of these products isn't keeping pace with their rapid development and issuance. In other words, people have no idea what they're buying. The companies are rushing these products out because they're trying to collect fees. These products are going to lose people a ton of money. And when people go looking for somebody to blame, the SEC and CNBC, they want to make sure that they don't get the blame. They want to divert the pitchforks and torches elsewhere, apparently. Remember, guys, stocks only ever go up, right? Right? Meanwhile, OpenAI declares code red as Google threatens AI lead. The company-wide memo is the most decisive indication yet of pressure at OpenAI as they face the pressure OpenAI faces from competitors. Yeah, there's Sam Altman pondering something. OpenAI CEO Sam Altman told employees Monday that the company was declaring a code red effort to improve the quality of ChatGPT and delaying other products as a result, according to an internal memo viewed by the Wall Street Journal. Altman said OpenAI had more work to do on the day-to-day experience of its chatbot, including improving personalization features for users, increasing its speed and reliability, and allowing it to answer a wider range of questions. The company-wide memo is the most decisive indication yet of the pressure on OpenAI is facing from competitors that have narrowed the startup's lead in the AI race. Of particular concern to Altman is Google, which released a new version of its Gemini AI model last month that surpassed OpenAI's models on industry benchmark tests and sent the search giant's stock soaring. So code red, that's bullish, right? Am I doing this right? Isn't that a good sign, code red? Maybe not. By the way, on the same day this code red gets issued, this is pretty interesting. ChatGPT experiences widespread issues as users flock to social media for answers. This was just a few hours later. ChatGPT users rushed to social media Tuesday afternoon to voice frustrations and concerns about issues plaguing the popular large language model service. According to a status update provided by OpenAI, the company that owns and operates ChatGPT and other AI services, a problem was identified around 11:30 a.m. that was causing elevated errors for users. Among the issues users reported were inability to log in, questions going unanswered, chats timing out, and previous conversations seemingly missing from the app and the website. I was working on a project and it started having issues with loading conversation errors. Now I don't see any conversation history nor any saved projects. This is inconvenient, one user of the supposedly productivity-enhancing tool wrote. Another complained about the poor timing of the system's errors because they had two essays due by the end of the day. You think there's a lesson in here? Hey, kids, don't rely on OpenAI to write your essay for you. It's a lousy product, and it doesn't work, and it hallucinates half the time, and your teachers can sniff this stuff out. Around noon, OpenAI said it was investigating the user errors, and shortly after that, it said mitigation efforts had been applied, and its team was monitoring the system's recovery. All right. Good news from OpenAI. You know, they're going to cure cancer and all that good stuff just as soon as they fix their problems. Look, shout out to my friend Greg Crennan, who posted this one about Marvell yesterday. We're running a little short from time, so we're going to rush through this one. AI stocks are pulling Enron-style accounting tricks, and here's the latest example. When Marvell first released its numbers yesterday, the stock dropped roughly 8% after hours to $85 a share. It deserved to. The financials were weak, minimal GAAP profitability, and dependence on non-GAAP adjustments and operating income that looked nothing like one would expect from a supposed core beneficiary of the AI data center boom. But then the earnings call started and something remarkable happened. Marvell began talking about projected revenue growth, revenue that does not exist today, revenue that was not included in the earnings statement, revenue that is not on the balance sheet, revenue that is entirely hypothetical. They discussed data center revenue going up 25% or more next year, semi-custom chip revenue expected to grow 20% next year, supposedly driven by next-generation AI silicon, future revenue from their Celestial AI acquisition years down the road, scenarios in which growth accelerates through 27 and 28. None of these numbers appeared in the SEC-regulated earnings release today. None hit the income statement. None hit cash flow. None affected profitability. But the market reacted as though Marvell had already booked the money. The stock flipped from down 8% to up 15% after hours, an after hours swing of roughly 23% based entirely on words uttered by executives about revenue that does not yet exist. You can see the wild swing in the chart below. This is not normal. This is not rational, and it's not how functioning capital markets are supposed to behave. This is the 2000 accounting play of hypothetical future value, aka HFV, the exact mechanism that helped Enron inflate its valuation two decades ago. Oh, look, another not Enron story. Enron made the fatal mistake of actually booking future expected profits as current income. That was fraud. Marvell did something much safer, but just as revealing, they talked about future expected profits instead. No accounting violation, no misstatement, no accrual trick. Just narrative and classic HFV. Great eye there from Greg at the Coastal Journal. Guys, he's on Substack. He's a good friend of mine. Check out the Coastal Journal. He is also on Twitter and X. And he has been very good sniffing out the problems at these AI companies. And look, Marvell already starting to fade here. It was up 15% at one point. Now it's up 7.8% trading at $100. This one might close red today. We've seen this in a lot of these AI earnings recently. They say a bunch of stuff that doesn't pass a sniff test on the earnings call. The stock rallies. People sell into that strength. People come to their senses, and it ends up closing red. Maybe that happens today. Maybe not. For now, it's up 8%. By the way, check out searches for AI stocks. Shout out to Kelani Amawi, who posted this one on X. Searches for AI stocks hit their zenith in mid-August and have since fallen, just as the stocks themselves are having a wobble. This is actually a reference to an Economist article that was paywalled. Thank you very much, Kalani, for posting this. Look, this is Google searching for AI stocks, peaks, and then drops off a cliff. I'm sure that's really good news for the AI bubble. Let's just look at some previous trends. Again, Kalani's posting this. Searches and Googling do a much better job of valuations at forecasting an imminent fall. In each case, the price of the stock basket, fund, or cryptocurrency dropped considerably over the 12 months following the peak in internet searches. And they're showing some of the histories here. The peak in dot-coms, February of 2000, down 90% in the ensuing 12 months. Dogecoin peaked in May of 21, down 80% in the ensuing 12 months. Bitcoin in 2017, down 70% a year later. GameStop in January of 21, down 70% a year later. ARK in March of 21, 65%. Weed stocks in 2018, 57%. Wearable tech, space, SPACs, solar, all down big within a year of the peak in Google search history. And remember, Google search history peaked back in August for AI stocks. All right, we're short of time here, guys, so we're going to rush through these last few. Dollar Tree raises profit outlook as strained consumers retrench. This is indicative of the struggling consumer. Good results for Dollar Tree, 4.2% rise in same-store sales. People are shopping here because they have to, because they're broke. This is a beneficiary of the consumer recession. That stock, it was up 4.5%. Now it's only up 1% and change here. So those gains are bleeding out here. Dollar Tree, $110.26. We also got Macy's. Now, this is interesting. Look at the headline. Macy's posts strongest growth in more than 3 years, but strikes cautious note on holidays. All right, that is an uber bullish headline. Now, let's look at Macy's comps here. Macy's said it expects flat to roughly 0.5% comparable sales growth from the previous year. All right, the most explosive growth in years, 0.5% same-store sales growth amid 3.2% inflation. That's not growth. That is a slow death. Macy's stock is behaving accordingly. Now, this one was down 6% and change. Let's refresh this. Now it's only down 1%. So somebody's buying Macy's stock here. I don't know who. I don't know why. But Macy's, look, guys, this is a real estate investment trust. It's a dying business. Don't touch anything related to malls. That's just my personal opinion. But hey, your money, you guys do what you want with it. Let's see. Last but not least, guys, let's check in on mortgages. Average 30-year mortgage rate eased to 6.32% for the week ending November 28th, the lowest in 4 weeks. All right, so mortgage rates dropped a little bit, a couple of basis points here, but still the volume of mortgage applications fell by 1.4% to the lowest level in nearly 3 months, led by a 4.4% fall in refi requests. Fewer refinancing requests amid lower rates. That's kind of interesting. Meanwhile, applications to purchase a home rose by 2.5% to the highest level since early 2023. We continue to see mixed results each week as the broader economic outlook remains cloudy, even as cooling home price growth and increasing for sale inventory brings some buyers back to the market. That last sentence is important here, guys. Prices have stopped going up. Inventory is increasing. Combine that with the consumer behavior. Combine that with the job losses, the expected layoffs over the holidays. Real estate market is about to turn south. And one last check in here. Let's see what's going on with Microsoft. Microsoft is now down 2.9% since that news about the, what did they do? They cut the quota for AI sales. Let's check in on NVIDIA. Again, guys, I'm short NVIDIA. NVIDIA is down 1%, $179.73. So not a total bloodbath in markets, but this is certainly not good news for the AI bubble. And I just want to say thank you very, very much to, hey, Frank, 300ZX. Thank you so much, Frank, for gifting 20 Nobody Special Finance memberships. The melon patch grows. Congratulations to you, 20 baby melons. Be sure and say thank you to Frank in the comments. And Frank, thank you, sir, for supporting the channel. Innovative Sustainable Solutions, thank you, sir, for the generosity. He says FedEx is closing a sorting facility in my hometown of Dallas, laying off 900 during peak logistical season. 18 years in the industry, and I've never seen December layoffs. Well, thank you for that anecdote, ISS. And look, guys, again, you have a choice where to spend your money. If you don't like companies firing people right before Christmas, don't spend your money with them. That's what I plan to do. I don't plan to spend money on people who, especially if you're trying to fire people so you don't have to pay them the bonus that you promised and you don't have to give them their time off. So now they don't get a vacation and they lose their job instead of getting the cash flow that they were promised in their employment statement. Sorry, you don't have to do that. You don't have to be so ruthless. And I get it, you know, fiduciary duty, shareholder value, but consumers have a choice. And maybe, just maybe, being a heartless, soulless piece of shit is bad for shareholder value if people decide they don't want to shop at your store or use your service because you fired your people right before Christmas. By the way, FedEx closing people right before Christmas, peak shipping season. Remember that story about 4840, the pallet company? Same thing, guys. The real economy stuff moving around continues to slow here. Excellent anecdote. Thank you, ISS, for supporting the channel. Madison Hype says Bitcoin goes to zero because the U.S. can't control it. USDC greater than BTC. I don't think Bitcoin goes to zero. I do think Bitcoin is heading a hell of a lot lower here. Bitcoin has never seen deflation. We're headed for a deflationary event. I don't know how long that deflation is going to last because, look, we're about to have a new dove put in charge at the Federal Reserve, and he's going to do what they always do, lower interest rates and print money. So whatever deflationary event is coming, it's going to be short-lived because they're going to turn on the money printers again. See also gold and silver and the price rally that they've had over the last couple of months. So Bitcoin will do very poorly during that deflationary event, which Bitcoin may cause because of the interconnected relationship between Bitcoin miners and AI and the crypto bros or the AI bros. They're the same bros. Honestly, somebody said in a super chat yesterday, I can't remember who it was, they said roughly a 50,000 target for Bitcoin this winter. I think that's on the cards here. I do think we could see 50,000 on Bitcoin. Zero, probably not. I don't think that's going to happen. And I think it's going to bottom out about a year from now. I still hold a little Bitcoin that I plan to hold all through crypto winter, just in case I'm wrong about all this. I do hedge my own decision-making. But I plan to start buying back into Bitcoin around November of next year. That's typically when it's going to bottom, sometime in the fall. I may start a little sooner than that. But it's usually about 75, 77 weeks before the next halving that you start to see the bottom forming in Bitcoin. We're a long way from the bottom. Thank you, Madison, for supporting the channel. Armando Reyes says, I can't wait for the fraud and SLV ETFs to finally be revealed. By the way, Bob Coleman flagged some very suspicious trading activity around SLV with naked shorting, and then all of a sudden options expiration is behind us. Then they create the shares of SLV. Armando says, there's more paper silver than actual physical. That is correct. I heard India shut down a fake company. All right, thank you for that data point. I have not heard of that one. India fake silver company. I vaguely recall a story about India cranking down on something involving silver, but a fake company, that's a stretch from the one I'm thinking of, so maybe that's two different ones. But thank you very much, Armando. I don't know if SLV is going to blow up here or not. That's kind of an extreme example, but look, SLV is useful for trades for price exposure. Don't buy SLV thinking you're getting silver, because you're not. You're getting a paper promise of silver. If you want to trade around SLV because you want to get levered exposure to an ETF, all right, make sure you understand the risk involved in that trade. SLV is useful for that. But unless you're an authorized participant, unless you're in the club that you're not in, you don't own silver when you buy SLV. Thank you very much, Armando, for supporting the channel. Zeeble Fritz, thank you, sir, for being a melonhead for 18 months. QT is over. Is QE on the horizon? Bubble inflation. Yes, QE is on the horizon. 2 months in a row now, we have seen small, modest spikes in SOFR, and we've seen an uptick in the usage of the standing repo facility. There are already signs of liquidity stress, and I had to cut it for length this morning but there was an article in MarketWatch that says the short-term rate conditions are already starting to show stress and that the Fed may need to act And the article in MarketWatch said something to the tune of the Fed may need to relieve stress through open market operations. Translation, the Fed may have to print money and buy bonds in order to increase the money supply, in order to relieve the stress in the bond market. So yeah, QE is coming again. Abso-freaking-lutely. See earlier answer, yes, there's a deflationary event coming, but the Fed will do what the Fed always does, zirp and burr, in response to that event. Thank you very much, Zeebel Fritz, for supporting the channel. Wuali, thank you, sir, for the generosity. Appreciate that. He says, I never understood shadow banking until I saw how it's all patterned after the N-word that I can't say, Germany's MIFO bills. I'm not aware of what those are. I don't know that. The wording has changed, but it's the same gig. It's a huge crime scene, many times the size of the global economy. All right, Wuali, I'm not familiar with the MEFOs or MIFOs, whatever they are. So I can't comment on that specifically, but I can tell you the real risk in shadow banking here, it is a risk to regular banks. What the banks are doing, Jamie Dimon's out there talking about cockroaches and risks in private credit, while his bank is providing the loans to private credit, and then private credit takes that money and loans it to people that the banks aren't allowed to loan to. In other words, the banks are just as guilty of this as the shadow banks. If the shadow banks go, that contagion risk will absolutely flow into the regional banks and the big banks. Abso-freaking-lutely. Just because they're using a middleman doesn't mean that risk isn't there. And, you know, pay attention, because private credit is trying to blow and blow into this AI bubble too. It is totally believable or highly plausible that at some point we are going to see banks go under because of loans made to these data center operators that go bad. I'd be surprised if it didn't happen. So thank you very much, Wuali, for supporting the channel. Appreciate that, sir. Metal Seer sends a super sticker. Thank you so much, Metal Seer, for supporting the channel. The super stickers don't show up on StreamYard, but I appreciate that very much. Hey, Harmonair LLC, he says, what is your opinion on timing for QE officially starting Q1 or Q2? Guys, timing, I'm not so good at that. All right, I'm going to be the first one to admit I suck at the whole timing thing. The question is, let's forget the timing of when it is, because the timing is going to be in response to some black swan event, all right? And I can't predict when the black swan is going to event. The real question is, how long after this event starts before they start up the money printer again? That's the question. Will the Fed start up the money printer as soon as the S&P drops 500 points? Or will they wait until it drops a few thousand? I don't know how fast they'll do it. Are they going to have the emergency in the middle of the night where they create the new acronym, I don't know, the AI relief program, where they buy up private credit debt through special purpose vehicles and park all that dog shit risk on the books of the central bank? In other words, basically inflate the money supply to pay off big tech's debt. Maybe that's what they do. The question is, how long after the downfall starts before the Fed acts? It's probably going to be pretty quick. When the banks failed in 2023, they did it awful quickly, didn't they? Then the question becomes, how big is the problem? And when the Fed acts, will it be sufficient to stop the decline? I don't know. But that's probably the timing thing, not really my strong suit, Harmonair. So I can't help you with that. I'm not the best trader in the world by any measure. I don't pretend to be. There are some people out there pretending to be, and they lost their people a whole bunch of money while filling my DMs up with threatening messages because they didn't like my analysis on CoreWeave. That's fun. How's that working out for you, buddy? So, yeah. Can't really give you an answer on that one, Harmonair. But thank you very much, sir, for supporting the channel. And thank you, everybody, for having your coffee with the Melonheads this morning. Appreciate all the generosity in the Super Chats, you guys, as well as you magnanimous Melonheads on Patreon, YouTube, and Buy Me a Coffee. Thank you guys so much. Links down below in the description, should you feel so inclined. Don't forget that like button and that subscribe button on the way out. Hi, Mom. Hi, Dad. Love you guys. Everybody, till next time, live small and dream big.